Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com. Join Josh and Chuck, the guys who bring you Stuff You Should Know, as they take a trip around the world to help you get smarter in a topsy-turvy economy. Check out the all-new Super Stuffed Guide to the Economy from HowStuffWorks.com, available now exclusively on iTunes.
Welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ben, here as always with auto editor Scott. Scott, what's going on today?
Nothing new, Ben. Just ready to get going.
Yeah?
I'm ready.
You feeling good?
I am. Feeling good today.
I've got a pretty interesting one for you.
Okay.
All right. So when we talk about the big three in the United States, and we're speaking of cars, we usually mean the big three car companies, right?
Sure.
But I've heard from other people that there are a different breed of car company, maybe not quite in competition with these big three, but coming up on the radar.
Oh, sure. You're talking about like independents or the small companies that you're seeing kind of emerging now, right? You're seeing a lot of unique new vehicles that aren't coming from Ford, Chrysler, or GM right now, right?
Exactly. Is that
what you're talking about? The smaller companies.
Is that true? Are they around?
Definitely true. Yeah, they're around now. They've been around, they're small companies all throughout history. But recently we've been seeing a significant increase in these small car companies, making vehicles that are, being shown at major auto shows now.
So wait, hang on a second. This is not necessarily a new thing. Is this more of a resurgence?
Definitely not a new thing. Small car companies have been, it hasn't always been the big three. In fact, those are just kind of the survivors, if you want to call them that. Hang on one second. I've got one thing I should probably tell you before we even get into this whole independent new kind of what we're talking about. But if you look back in history, between the period of, I think, now I've got numbers in front of me here, but between 1896 and 1930, take a stab at how many car companies you think were in just in the United States, just automobile manufacturers within the United States, 1896 to 1930. How many?
Okay. All right. Let's see. I don't get a lifeline or 50-50.
No.
I'm going to phrase it in a question. Mm-hmm. Would I be in the ballpark if I said 20?
Not even close.
Not even close?
Not even close.
Am I too low?
Way too low.
Really?
Yeah.
80.
Way too low.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. And this is just the United States.
Okay.
Remember.
Okay. 150?
Way, way more than that.
I give up.
Okay. 1,800.
18, really?
1,800. There were 1,800 automobile manufacturers in the United States in that period of time.
Were they all making one car each or something?
No, they made, a lot of them, of course, all out of business, except for, just very few left surviving. They made, some may have made only a few vehicles before they, had to shut the doors. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. There was a lot happening at that time. Of course, the Depression took out several of them. I mean, if you look at this list, I've got a list in front of me that no one else can see but Ben. but it's pages and pages long. It's alphabetical, has the years that the companies were open, and a lot of them are just maybe a single year. Others have a span of years, but maybe, 10 years for a good one. Several of them are just maybe a year or two at the most.
Oh, that's the list.
That's the list, yeah. I mean, these are listed alphabetically. These are, again, just the United States. But it's a, 40 pages?
Yeah.
1,800 car companies. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're laid out here right in front of you. And you can see that, have you ever heard of an Allen Kingston or an Allstate? I mean, there's cars there that, you just wouldn't, you might see them at a show. Mm-hmm. There may be one left and that's it, or, a few left. But they're held on tightly, held on too tightly by collectors, and or maybe all the examples have ended up in a junkyard somewhere.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them just don't make it.
I guess now that we're saying that, I can understand that there would have been more, that the three companies we call the big three now mm-hmm. would be the survivors. But my gosh, for our listeners, that is less of a list than it is a stack of paper.
It is. It looks like a small phone book or something like
yeah.
that. But really, when you think about it, any one of the three surviving companies could have ended up on that list as well. It just, it's just bad luck. It's bad timing. It's poor management. It's, anything. I mean, what if the only factory that built the vehicle burned down? And it was just some economic hardship that they just couldn't get over. The things like that happen to all these people. I mean, you can't even guess what the many different things that happen to
sure.
these people to make their company go out of business.
Yeah, there's too many variables.
Oh yeah, way too many. But it's an interesting list, anyways. I mean, if you get a chance, if you search defunct United States automobile manufacturers, you'd be able to find, find that list, and it's pretty impressive. A lot of them have links that you can go to and check out, some unusual makes of vehicles, and a lot of them have photos attached, so you can check out some of these kind of crazy cars that you wouldn't see anywhere else except for an auto show.
Yeah, if then.
Antique auto show, of course.
Well, then let's take it up to the current time, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Because if we're examining these big three survivors of the last out-and-out auto company competition, right, on that scale, mm-hmm. Who are our new players?
Well, clearly we don't have 1,800 in the United States right now. I mean, I can pretty much guarantee that we don't have 1,800 new automobile manufacturers right now in the United States. But there are a few cropping up here and there, and the ones we'll talk about, they aren't all in the United States. There's some that are around the world, of course. And there's another list of companies around the world that have gone out of business, and that's equally impressive. But I think the United States had the majority of them. But looking at the current players, I mean, right now we like to talk about the Aptera around here.
Aptera
hybrid vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. That's a West Coast company. These aren't all United States, but there's Fisker Automotive. There's Ariel Motors. We've got Loremo, which is a German company, I believe. Venturi, which is made in Monaco.
Yeah.
There's a ton of different vehicles that are out there that we hear about a little bit about right now. We're not hearing a lot about them quite yet because they're not quite to the point where they're mass producing vehicles, and they may never get to the point where they mass produce. But some of them are right now building vehicles, one at a time, hand built vehicles that are tailor made vehicles for people that order them, and they're pretty pricey, some of them.
Yeah. So they all sound kind of high end.
Well. Sort of, yeah. I mean, the goal, though, is for them to be able to mass-produce vehicles, that are relatively affordable, but they have the same, the same ideas that they started with. They want, if they wanted to build a fuel-efficient hybrid vehicle, they want to continue to make that fuel-efficient hybrid vehicle out of the materials that they made, that they originally built the concept vehicle. They don't want to have to vary too greatly from where they started and where they end up, in order, they don't want to compromise what they started.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the position with a lot of these is that, Aptera, they've got a three-wheel electric car right now that they just can't quite. I mean, they're in the beginning stages of production,
mm-hmm.
and I think right now they're maybe hand building vehicles they may always hand build vehicles, they're not going to be mass produced, or not going, or at least not right now. I'm kind of talking myself into a corner here, Ben.
No, yeah, yeah.
what I'm really trying to get at is that right now they're trying to get funding.
I see.
They're trying to get funding. They're trying to get over that hump in order to begin this mass producing, mass production rather.
You want to hear?
And so we'll see them on the road, hopefully.
I hate to interrupt, but you want to hear an interesting story?
Yeah.
And you're going to have to kind of come with me because it's a bit of a tangent.
Okay.
All right. So. I caught a wild hair, and I thought, I was thinking, don't ask me to explain this, Scott, because it's going to sound crazy.
Right.
I was thinking about maybe starting a small chicken operation, having a chicken coop in my backyard. I know, just hear me out. And so I started looking into this, and I said, okay, I know it's going to be work, but there are definite benefits. I'm working toward a larger goal. But then I learned about the overhead involved,
mm-hmm.
And that kind of killed the future of Ben's chicken coop, if I would make a better name, of course. But it really, when we're talking about starting a car company, I mean, the overhead must be massive for these people to even build one or two cars. And it sounds like they're building these vehicles and taking them around to different exhibitions, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. They're trying to get investors to be interested in the vehicle enough that they fund them. They say, hey, I believe in your idea as well. Here's $2 million to help. I want to be in on the ground floor on this thing.
Wow, that's tough.
So when this thing explodes, I want to be right there. I want to be on the board. I want to be a stockholder, et cetera. And the problem right now with the one that we were just speaking about, mm-hmm. the Aptera, is that... This is frustrating, okay, I'm about to say here. I've got this in front of me that says that there's money out there available. for something like this, for new vehicles. Here's the problem. It's called the Advanced Technology Vehicles Manufacturing Incentive Program. And there's $25 billion in low-interest loans available for cars to meet the CAFE standards, which are 35 miles per gallon. Okay, now, here's the problem. The Aptera isn't qualified for these loans because they're considered a motorcycle. They're not qualified for
it's three wheels.
That's right. They're not. It's technically considered a motorcycle, so they don't qualify. So here's a car that gets, we're talking like, okay, I don't even, it's like 280 or 300 miles per gallon. That's what we're talking about.
Wow,
right?
That's crazy.
Yeah, and they can't get a loan, a low-interest loan. It's not even just money, you know, it's not just being handed to them. It's
not
a loan.
Grant.
It's
yeah.
a loan, and they don't qualify because they're considered a motorcycle, but the money is going to car companies, quote-unquote, car makers that, you know, trying to achieve 35 miles per gallon.
Wow.
So do you see the problem here? So they're trying to turn that around right now, and there's, you know, somewhat of a fight going on. So we'll see how it all pans out. But, you know, that's just kind of one of the things that makes, you know, someone bang their head against the wall. You know, why can't we get this going here? But that's one reason. It's
difficult,
block.
You know?
Yeah, and I'm sure that other car companies are having this, you know, similar difficulties, but I know of the Aptera, you know, troubles right now.
And we really have talked about the Aptera before in pretty positive light. What are there any good stories for these companies?
There's great stories. And I'm telling you, Aptera is a great story as well. Mm-hmm. It's just frustrating right now that the position that they're in. They just need the fund. They've got everything else in place. They just need the funding in order to kind of get the ball rolling. Fisker Automotive, they're on their way. They've got it's an electric vehicle that gets around 100 miles per gallon. Its top speed 125 miles per hour.
Nice.
0 to 60 in 6 seconds. So it's a performance vehicle.
Yeah.
Really. Again, it's a plug-in hybrid though, which is kind of unique. Uses something called a Q Drive, but the price is around $87,900. So it's a little pricey still, but they are making cars and they're taking orders. So all these companies, if you go to their website, they'll take a down payment. They're refundable. Yeah, they need money to get these things going.
I imagine.
Okay, you've probably heard of Ariel Motors. That's they've got kind of a unique. It looks like a go kart almost. It looks like an exoskeleton for the car. It's real small. Uses a Honda engine. Nothing hybrid about it right now. I mean, there may be a version of it that is, but just out and out sports car is really kind of cool. You wear a helmet when you drive it and everything. I don't know if you have to or not.
You know, I was going to tell you. I think that since we're near Georgia Tech here, where we're based, so I was going through the Georgia Tech campus recently, and I saw some folks on something that looked like that. Now I'm not prepared to say whether or not it was. I kind of doubt that it was, just because there's so few of those out. But it was, it looked like what you're describing.
Okay, it could have been. It's a car that you sit inside. It looks like a go kart, really. If you look at it, it's called the Ariel Atom, spelled ATOM, and it's definitely worth looking at. But again, that's around $65,000, and again, you know, just a small car company that's doing, you know, doing business right now. They're doing all right.
Yeah.
Big following. And there's Venturi, which is made in Monaco, Western Europe. Mm-hmm. And these cars, they make a model called, well, they make several models. They make the Fetish, the Eclectic, the Astrolabe, and I think it's called the Volage.
Super high-end.
The Fetish is around $400,000.
$400,000?
Yeah, $400,000 for a Fetish, a Venturi Fetish.
Now, I assume that's customized.
In 5 years, they're going to make 25 of them total. That's it. So you custom order your vehicle. You know, they have a designer that's working, a designer that designs the interior for you, you know, colors and patterns and everything you want. And it's one of those types of vehicles. But again, it's an electric sports car. So it's, you know, kind of this new, unique vehicle that, you know, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people are pretty interested in.
Yeah. And that's starting to emerge as a niche market, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You mean electric cars?
Like performance electric cars.
Yes. And you often find that these electric cars are pretty good performers, because when you have an all-electric vehicle, you've got wheels either in the motor, or in the wheels. Did I say wheels in the wheels? You have motors in the wheels sometimes, and the really cool part about electric motors is that you've got all the torque available instantly. So oftentimes they're very quick. They may not be fast. They may not have an overall top speed that's, you know, blazing, or they might, but they're usually very quick.
And of course, as soon as that battery weight stops dragging them down.
Yeah, that's right, if they can figure that out.
Yeah,
they've got a winner. Then there's the Loremo, which is an entrant in the Automotive X Prize right now.
Really?
That's the, we'll talk about that later.
Sure.
So another podcast. But it's gets around, I think I've seen estimates around 157 miles per gallon. Loremo stands for Low Resistance Mobile. So, the whole idea is that, you know, it's lightweight, it's aerodynamic, it's very efficient. Hopefully, you know, they'll make something as well. Hopefully
it's built as though they were listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. It was built long before our podcast.
Yeah,
but,
I'm kidding.
But there's an anticipated price tag of only about $13,000.
Wow.
That's anticipated. Now,
yeah,
that may change dramatically when it eventually comes to market, but that's pretty reasonable when you look at, you know, the Venturi that's $400,000 or, the nearly $90,000 Fisker.
Sure. Especially in the context of these guys.
Doesn't quite have the same, pep as the other vehicles do, the flair, but still pretty cool.
I got to tell you before you continue.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm cheating because I just took a glance at your list. Mm-hmm. You're going to one of my favorites right now.
Tesla. Really? That's one of your favorites?
I have a very positive opinion of the Tesla company.
Why so?
Well, probably because of some of the conversations we've had about Tesla before.
Is it because Arnold loves it? Is that why?
Not entirely.
Yeah. I knew it had some of the Terminator. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. It's because I think that it was the first time, at least, that I realized what we were just speaking about, a niche market for high performance alternative fuel vehicles, mm-hmm. you know, which really drives, I believe, some of the investment opportunities or helps them tackle the overhead.
Sure.
Know?
I mean, you could argue that Tesla's fairly successful right now. I mean, everybody's heard of them. Mm-hmm. They're opening dealerships, and I think they have one in Chicago now, or they will soon. They're expanding. They're not just the West Coast. You know, for a while it was pretty limited, and it's kind of like, well, is this going to work out? And,
right.
You know, we've got 7 charging stations here on the West Coast, and okay, well, what does that do for everybody in the Midwest or the East Coast? But they're expanding, and, you know, hopefully that'll catch on, and maybe, who knows, you know, maybe we'll have Teslas here in Atlanta pretty soon.
Right. Tell you what, I would buy one for you if I could.
You know, and they've got a new model recently that's about half the price of the Roadster. The Tesla S, is that right? The sedan that's coming out?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's down to around 60,000.
And the Roadster is, how much is the Roadster now?
I think it's like 108,000 or something like that. It's pretty pricey. It's,
yeah,
it's still up there. I mean, that's an expensive car.
Sure.
Even now. okay, I got one more on my short list here, and we can move on after that. But,
right, sure.
Oh, you know what? This is slightly off topic, but we should talk. I mean, this is an idea for maybe a future podcast.
Okay.
But you ever heard of an orphan car?
Not before right now.
Okay, well, the idea behind an orphan car is mm-hmm. that an orphan car is a car that was made by a company that has since gone out of business. So it's left without a parent company, really.
Oh, okay, okay.
Aptly named, I guess, but orphan car shows are all around the United States. They've got them, and I'm sure that they're elsewhere in the world as well, but you know that huge list of defunct automakers
yes.
that we have?
Yes.
All those have orphan vehicles that are left behind now.
Oh,
so
nice,
any
Scott,
of those,
you brought it back.
Any of those cars could participate in these orphan car, not competitions, but shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of unique because you may never see them anywhere else except these shows.
That is a great idea. For
yeah.
We
okay,
should do
well,
that.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll work that out.
Last car on the list.
Last car.
Here's an interesting one. I'll probably screw up the name of it.
Okay.
Right? Terrafugia.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try.
It's as if I'm trying to order at a Chinese restaurant or something. But this is the flying car. This is the one that, we've talked about this in a previous podcast. It's actually called the Transition, and they call it the Transition Rotable Aircraft.
Okay.
So Terrafugia is a new, relatively new, small car company. However, they make a flying car, and this one actually works. You can watch it. You can download a video of it flying. It's test flight.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't fly very high. Doesn't fly very far.
I'm okay with that.
But it flies. And all you have to do for this one, now you don't have to get out and assemble wings. You don't have to do any of that stuff. And, you know, we don't have to get deep into this like we did on the other podcast.
Right,
but
right.
This one really works. You push a button, it transforms into a plane. You push a button, it transforms back into a car. And you can drive it on the road, and you can park it in your garage. It fits. Other than the length, I think it's about 19 feet long.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's got to be a downside.
Yeah, there's a lot of downsides. The cost, though, is still prohibitive. It's around $194,000. So, again, we're talking about a car that's $194,000, but it's also a plane.
Yeah, okay.
So, is it worth it? I don't know. I mean, that's up to you.
Yeah.
Well, they'll take a $10,000 down payment right now if you or deposit.
Right,
which
now?
Is fully refundable. Yeah, if you want to, you could go to their website and you could,
That's what I should do.
Hand over $10,000. But see, that's another example of a small car company that, you know, we need this much money in order to begin production on your car, and it'll take, I don't know how long it said. A lot of these, you know, are months or even a year wait time, because once you order, they build your car for you.
Like the Venturi.
That's right, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
So
I've seen this one really work. It really does work.
You know, I feel almost as though you're setting me up for something, because you hit on all the keywords that suckered me into flying cars when we did that earlier podcast. You know, transforming. I'm a sucker for that.
I knew that.
Yeah. And if it really works, I mean,
it really does. It really does. Watch the video, and you'll. You'll be a believer.
I will watch the video, and I promise you I will not pester you about it.
I still, however, I haven't changed my opinion about the car, though, about flying cars or about this type of vehicle in general. I just still don't think it's a very good idea.
And you know what? I'll weigh in there. Yes, I understand where you're coming from. I completely agree. I still really want one. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to do it, because I think in our earlier show, you pointed out, and we both kind of pointed out, some very, very concerning
that's right.
aspects.
And you know who else doesn't like them?
Who else doesn't?
Saul.
Oh, Saul from
Saul's a listener. Saul wrote in. He's a high-speed stuff listener, and he had a good point. So he said that, in addition to the laundry list of stuff that, you know, disadvantages of these flying cars,
sure.
He points out that imagine what a fender bender would be like if, let's say you're on the road, you know, you get in a fender bender. Now try to fly in that car that has the fender's dented in or missing. The aerodynamics just don't work. He said there's, you know, in addition to that, you know, there's this meticulous maintenance that you have to keep up with on an airplane. And you know, you're just not going to be. I mean, what if you're at a stoplight and someone bumps into you and, you know, just kind of dings the corner of your vehicle? Well, when you're flying, that has to be. I mean, I'm totally speaking. You know, I just don't know here, but
sure.
I'm saying that, you know, if you got a banged up fender or something that's bent in an angle that shouldn't be bent at, I got to think that's got to cause a lot of drag and possibly even be dangerous when you're in the air.
Sure, like if you get a, I guess the closest comparison to dinging wings, right?
Yeah.
Imagine, you know, if you're in a closed parking spot and you hit somebody's side mirror.
Yeah.
You know, you'll maybe exchange insurance information or check to see if it's damaged. But either way, you can drive with it.
Oh, sure.
But if you have a dent on a wing in the wrong place, it's going to affect the pitch and the yaw.
How many cars have you ever seen that have, you know, 2x4 bumper? How many? Really?
Yeah,
lots.
I've seen lots.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. You cannot do that on a vehicle like this. You can't have anything taped on or wired on or anything like that. This has to be. It's an airplane. It has to be solid. You don't want to be in the air, you know, traveling 400 miles at I think it's 115 miles per hour is the top speed of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You just simply can't do it. So he's right. Saul's right that maintenance is, key in this factor. And, you know, when you've got your airplane on, the intersection there at Main Street, you don't want somebody to bang into you, because you're then not only is your car damaged, but your plane doesn't work.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah,
thank
I mean,
you
your
for $194,000
car is just a car now.
Yeah, just a car. That
kind
looks,
of a funny looking car.
Yeah, it looks kind of silly. Yeah. Now I've seen the picture.
Yeah, but
there.
He's right. Thanks, Saul, for writing it.
Yeah, thanks for writing in. And I guess that about wraps it up for us on this one, huh, Scott?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to mention.
Yes.
Check out our blog.
Our blog.
Homepage. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I've got
right.
a blog, and it's worth looking at. We cover a ton of different topics. In fact, I've written about this flying car recently, so you may want to look back and see that in the archives.
Well, you heard it here first, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. And if you have any ideas or suggestions for a future topic, please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com. And please take the time to check out our blog on the homepage.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.